Library of the Living Dead, in association with Darker Projects, presents Zompod. Undead stories for the zombie apocalypse. Episode number 2, featuring Eric S. Brown's What Rough Beast and The Last Man, originally appearing in Madman's Dreams. Clint sat on the porch of the mom-and-pop gas station. The summer heat was almost unbearable, and sweat glistened on his chest. The only clothing he wore was a loose pair of boxer shorts. The swinging bench he rested on creaked as he used his bare feet to rock back and forth. Clint stared out into the empty highway and barren sand that stretched for miles in both directions. He'd lived here almost 2 months now, ever since he'd paused during his desperate flight from the city, and had found the old man lying on the porch with half his face gone and a high-powered rifle clutched in his rigid hands. This, Clint had thought, must be Pop. After a whole hour of stuffing himself on the gas station's groceries, Clint finally found Mom. Apparently, she'd died before Pop, and the old man had locked her away in the store's cellar sometime before taking his own life. He hadn't had the heart to deal with her himself. When Clint had heard the bumping and shuffling from the cellar, he put two and two together and grabbed his 9mm from his car. Even armed, it had a close call. When he unlocked the door, Mom broke out so fast that Clint had to put 5 rounds in her chest just to keep her away long enough to get a clean headshot. He vomited long and hard over her decomposing corpse before carrying her outside and burying her behind the station alongside Pop. As Clint had shoveled, he realized just how much fortune had smiled on him. The station, also a general store and a home for its owners, had its own food, water, fuel, and even a generator. Best of all, it was in the middle of nowhere. He'd ended up staying the night there, and then had simply decided to stay. He took what he felt were the necessary precautions. He locked and boarded up all the windows and the back door, leaving only the heavy wooden main door and its screen unfortified so he could come and go as he pleased. He had also moved a good portion of the station's supplies into the cellar, should he be forced to retreat into its depths. But he had also filled his gas tank and moved his car as close to the station's main door as he could, just in case. It was better to be prepared for everything than to be left wanting. Yet, in the time that he had stayed at the station, he'd only seen one car streak by. He'd run outside to flag the driver down, but the car had disappeared over the horizon. There'd been no sign of the dead, and he thanked the Lord for it every night. At first, he'd spent his time listening to the radio because the station had no TV. The airways had been filled with civilian newscasters nearly screaming about the dead plague and about how the urban areas had become death traps due to their heavy populations. These rants had been sharply contrasted by the calm fronts of military guests and guests from the Center for Disease Control, who were on the shows constantly these days. Seemed that no one really knew what was happening. The dead had just started refusing to die, and the living were paying the price. The dead roamed the streets, killing everyone they came across, victims rising to join their ranks. By Clint's third day in his new home, the radio stations began to vanish from the airways, one by one. His hopes of humanity getting it together and beating this disaster started to grow dark. Then, on the fourth day, the first radio station came back on the air. That had been the moment all Clint's hope of rescue had died. The show had been the same, and yet startlingly different. The DJ's voice was hollow, and it grated like boots on gravel. His slow, jagged speech was not human in any way, and at random intervals, he began to speak in a language unlike any Clint had heard. a series of hisses and clicks that caused Clint to shudder inside. By the end of his first week at the gas station, Clint had taken the radio outside and had blown it to bits with the old man's rifle. Clint spent the rest of his time in utter isolation, except for the company of a lone coyote that came out from the sands at dark to rummage through the trash in search of food. As time went by, Clint and his visitor forged a mutually beneficial relationship. Clint began to leave out food, and eventually the coyote would let him sit on the porch and talk to it as it ate and nosed through the trash for more. Back on the porch, Clint reached up and wiped the sweat from his brow. He took a sip from the can of hot Coke in his hand and got up from the bench. The sun was beginning to set, and he wanted to get ready for his friend. But as he turned to head inside, he saw smoke. Clint blinked and shook his head, trying to clear it. In the distance, a cloud of thick black smoke billowed up towards the heavens. Clint wondered for a moment how long it had been there. Had he been so lost in his own mind that he hadn't noticed it before? Or had it simply risen up as he'd gotten off the bench? Part of him wanted to pretend it wasn't there at all, to simply head back into the station and go on with his routine. But he knew he couldn't. If people were out there, they might need his help. Or perhaps they might be able to help him. And if it were the dead, coming for him at last, he needed to know so that he could prepare. He dressed in the clothes that he'd arrived in, packed a bag with water and a first aid kit, and checked the old man's rifle. It was fully loaded, so he swung it onto his shoulder by the carrying strap. Clint had ruled out taking the car to investigate. The noise of its engine would give him away for sure. And if it were the dead, they would flock to him in droves, even if he ran. They'd follow him back here, and he'd be forced to run again. The station still had enough stock to keep him going for months if he rationed properly, and he had no intentions of giving it up easily. So he set out on foot towards the smoke, miles away to the south. After an hour's walk, Clint stood on the sand and stared at the wreck up ahead of him through a pair of binoculars that he'd looted from the store. The smoke was coming from an overturned 18-wheeler. The gas tank had exploded at some point after the massive truck had run off the road and overturned, and small blazes still leapt and danced about in its wreckage. Three people, two men and a woman, moved about on the road near it. It appeared as if they were arguing over something which lay in the middle of the road between them, though it wasn't clear if they had survived the accident or not. The dead acted so much like the breathing until you got too close and they saw you. Silently, Clint crept through the dunes towards the trio. As he drew near, he could see that one of the men carried a high-powered hunting rifle like his own, but the others appeared unarmed. Clint lifted his binoculars again, focusing on the dark lump in the asphalt that they seemed to be fighting over. As he recognized it, bile rose up in his throat. It was, correction, had been, his friend. The coyote's body was a crumpled mass of shattered bones from its midsection down, but its front end was intact, though smeared with blood. As he watched it snarl and snap at the people around it, Clint could hear its tortured yipping inside his mind, calling to him, calling for him. He was able to see the people clearly now. There was no doubt that they were alive, battered and bruised and looking terribly underfed, but alive. Clint started to get to his feet and run to them just as the man raised the rifle and leveled it at the coyote's head. Clint's instinct took over. He dropped back to one knee and jerked his own rifle up, taking aim. The night cracked with thunder, and the man's lifeless body toppled to the road with a hole between his eyes. Everything seemed to move in a blur. The woman screamed. Clint was running to them. His 9mm was suddenly in his hand. A series of shots echoed again. When the redness cleared from Clint's vision, he found himself among his victims' bodies, watching blood leak slowly onto the road from the woman's unmoving lips. His friend, the coyote, snarled at him with hunger, and maggots swarmed through its coarse fur. He looked into its eyes and felt tears sliding down his own cheeks. The unarmed man he had just put three rounds into moments before began to twitch and stir with unlife. Surrounded by the dead and the true dead alike, Clint finally gave up. The barrel of his 9mm scratched the roof of his mouth. As the coyote continued to yip and drag itself towards him, Clint shut his eyes and squeezed the trigger. Last Man by Eric S. Brown. You'd think that being the last man on Earth would be fun. Hell, maybe it would be. The damn dead stayed in their graves. The fantasy of being chased by a mob of ladies takes on a different tone when their flesh is gray and decayed, and they want your body for the literal taste of its blood and meat. I should have known better than to break into the woman's prison. But damn, it's like 20 degrees in the sun and the snow is still falling. So I break off the lock on the main gates and start heading in, dreaming of a roof over my head and of watching furniture burn in a warm fire. But I freeze as women pour into the prison yard, like kids who've just seen the ice cream truck pull up. I stand there with the broken lock in my hands and watch them come. And at last, my mind snaps out of it and I jerk my 9mm from its holster. A few well-placed shots splatter the brains of the closest three, staining the snow a blackish red. There's no way I can take them all down. I guess they number about 4 dozen in all. Turning my back to them, I hightail it towards the forest outside the gates. Why the hell couldn't all the movies about slow zombies be right, I wonder, as they sprint after me, their nearly frozen joints popping. When I reach the trees, I risk a look back. One of them, a blonde missing her lower jaw, is right there in my face. I panic. I grab her by the hair and slam her head into the bark of the nearest tree till my hands are soaked with the black crap that passes for the blood of the dead. I drop her corpse and look up to see that the others are only a few feet away, closing fast. No time to take another shot at them with the pistol. Again, I'm running, dodging trees and leaping over logs, limbs, and brush. I zigzag through the woods, hoping that if I get out of the line of sight, they'll lose me. No such luck. The damn things are like bloodhounds with the smell of warm flesh. I plunge my hand into the pocket of my heavy coat as I pant and pump my legs. I pull out my only grenade, looted from the body of a half-eaten soldier a few towns back, and I pull out the pin, tossing the bomb over my shoulder. It lands too close. The force of the explosion throws me and sends me rolling. When I come to a stop, I leap to my feet, despite the searing pain in my back. I hold my 9mm ready. Pieces of several ladies twitch in the snow not far away. The rest of the pack comes trampling over them. I empty my clip in a series of thunderclaps, drowning out their hungry howling. Oh yeah, great fun to be the last man, I think, as the first woman tackles me and we go sprawling. When the ladies pour over me, I don't scream. Instead, I find myself laughing as their mouths rip through my clothes and find what they seek. I keep right on laughing until a set of yellow teeth tears out my vocal cords, until I'm just as cold as they are, and the warmth of my parka no longer matters. What Rough Beast and The Last Man, written by Eric S. Brown, originally appearing in the Permuted Press release, Madman's Dreams. Music in What Rough Beast from Podsafe Music. Artist was Dan Tharp. The song, Desert Wash. Theme song by Steve Kane. This has been a Library of the Living Dead in association with Darker Projects production.